Welcome to the Rail Market Update on the State of Freight podcast, brought to you by FTR, where we share timely transportation intelligence with you on a weekly basis. The Rail Market Update is hosted by FTR's Vice President of Rail and Intermodal, Todd Tranowski. As Todd presents the information in the podcast, you can follow along and review the graphs and indicators by downloading a PDF or PowerPoint version of the presentation from our podcast landing page. A link to the PDF is available now at www.ftrintel.com/podcast. From there, you can also find past episodes and downloads of the Rail Market Update, as well as the weekly Trucking Market Update with Avery Weiss and much more. That link again is www.ftrintel.com/podcast.
Hello and welcome to the FTR State of Freight Rail Market Update podcast. As always, I am your host, Todd Tranowski, the Vice President of Rail and Intermodal here at FTR. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to listen to the podcast this week and every week. Hopefully everybody had a good 4th of July holiday. Hopefully everybody's getting a chance to rotate out, get some rest and relaxation this summer. It is already the middle of July. By the time you blink, it will be August. Kids will be starting to go back to school. It'll be starting to have those last few beach weekends, those last few camping weekends, however it is that you relax and recover in the summer. So get those in now. It's already the middle of July. Hard to believe, really, that we're already that far through 2022, but alas, we are. And with that, with being into the middle of July, it is time to remember to start planning for the fall. Start thinking about what's coming up later this year, what your travel schedule is going to look like. Remember that to put on your calendars September 13th through the 17th, the Crown Plaza Union Station in downtown Indianapolis. Join us for the FTR Transportation Conference. It's back bigger and better than ever this year, back in person in Indianapolis. We're going to have 4 great days. One day for each of the modes. So we're going to have a day dedicated to truck freight, a day dedicated to truck and trailer equipment, a day dedicated to rail and intermodal freight, and a day dedicated to rail equipment. You will not want to miss these days. You will want to get them on your calendar right now. Get them booked. Get your travel arrangements made. It is bigger and better than ever this year. 4 great days of transportation information that you will not want to miss. September 13th to the 17th. At the Crown Plaza Union Station in downtown Indianapolis. And with that commercial plug out of the way, let's dive in this week. Let's talk about what we're seeing in the markets. And, well, we're seeing, from a numbers perspective, from a volumes perspective, the latest week's numbers include the 4th of July holiday. Those of you that do this all the time know that the numbers that come out this week are for the week ended last Saturday. Well, last week includes the 4th of July holiday. So we see everything on an absolute basis take a decline this week because there's one less business day. And there's probably a little bit more of a decline than you might otherwise see because of how the holiday fell this year. It fell on a Monday. People took a long weekend. Maybe they took the whole week. Maybe they took a little extra downtime. So you definitely see that effect, but you don't see anything that's outside of typical seasonal patterns. You don't see anything that's outside of what we would normally expect to see in the July 4th holiday week for most commodity groups, and we'll talk about the exceptions to that. But by and large, we see typical holiday week behavior, and in the data that comes out next week for the week we're currently in, we would expect to see most of those sectors bounce right back to where they were before the holiday. And if they don't, that'll be something to think about, to explore, to look at what's driving those issues. And of course, uncertainty remains high in the rail industry, not just around service, but around labor. You have issues potentially on the West Coast. You have issues potentially with operating employees on the railroads. There are a lot of headlines this week about some of those, about some of those things, with the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen voting to authorize a strike. Another union also authorized a strike. It's important to remember, we see a lot of headlines, we see a lot of discussion of its potential. It's still a long way off. The Railway Labor Act that governs how negotiations go between railroads in the United States and their operating employees are very different than what we see, say, in Canada, where you see sort of regular work stoppages, regular service interruptions because of labor. You don't get that in the United States. And even with these authorization votes, even with all of the headlines, we're still a long way away from an actual work stoppage on the railroads in the United States. There will, in all certainty, be a presidential emergency board appointed between now and Monday to make recommendations about how to solve this issue. The PEB will meet for 30 days, and then it will issue its recommendations, after which there's another 30-day cooling-off period where the two sides cannot take any sort of work action against the other to try and use the PEB's recommendations as a baseline for an agreement. So we are at least 64 days from any potential work stoppage that might happen. And it's important to remember that these are rare. These are once-in-a-career events. You know, the last nationwide rail work stoppage lasted 2 days, and it was back in 1992. Think about that for a second. 30 years ago, what were you doing in 1992? You were probably doing something else, probably in high school or college or doing something other than thinking about the rail industry. That's how long it has been since the last nationwide rail strike. They are very, very rare occurrences, and the Railway Labor Act is set up to keep it that way, to ensure that we don't have the kind of disruption that would occur if a work stoppage was allowed to happen in 2022. Now, until we see the recommendations of the Presidential Emergency Board, there really isn't a need or a desire to get all worked up about its possibility. And now, if the PEB recommendations come out in 33, 34 days, and they're not the basis for an agreement, if they are all tilted one direction, then you start to worry some more. Then you start to think about what it would look like. Then you start to think about, do we need to lobby for a second presidential emergency board? Do we need to do things like that to try and head off a work stoppage? But until that time, it is a very low probability event on the rail side of the house. And I want everybody to walk away with a clear understanding that it is a very low probability event, that it is not something that's likely, even at this point, even with all the saber rattling and all of the headlines out there, it's still far, far remote off in the distance, something that could certainly happen. There's no denying that negotiations, that animosity between the railroads and their unionized operating employees are acrimonious, probably as acrimonious as they've been in the last 30 years. But that in and of itself does not mean that we're going to see a work stoppage. So let's drill down a little bit and let's talk about the numbers. And you can see an intermodal, overall intermodal, took a sharp decline in the latest week. But look at the year-over-year numbers and look at the five-year average numbers. You'll see that we're down just a little bit from where we were last year, that we're essentially in line with the five-year average. So for a holiday week, intermodal behaved typically. It behaved the way you would expect it to behave for the 4th of July. The $64,000 question will be, what happens in this current week? Where do volumes come back to? Do they come back to where they were running before the July 4th holiday, or do they do what they did at Memorial Day and come back to a lower level? That is what we'll have to see when the data comes out next week. That is what all eyes will be on, because that will determine in large part what peak season is going to look like. That will give us our first early indication at what the outlook potentially is going forward for the second half of the year for intermodal. On the trailer side of the house, took a significant decline, just like containers, in the holiday week. But it didn't take any more of a decline than you would normally expect for the July 4th holiday. So overall, the markets are behaving normally. We will see next week where they come back to. I would like, particularly on the trailer side, to see this number bounce back, then bounce back strongly to where it was in the 18,000 or so trailer a week level, to be able to feel comfortable that we've bounced back from the holiday, that we're not seeing a further erosion of volumes. When you start to get down the way we are in the holiday week, if we stay at this 14,000 trailer a week level, that would probably give us some pause going forward. But if we bounce right back to that 18,000 level, I think those concerns go away. Those concerns mitigate quite a bit. On the container side, it's a little bit stronger than overall intermodal, but given the weak trailer number we just talked about, given the fact that that containers are 90% of overall intermodal volume, you would sort of expect that behavior to go on as we go through the go through the holiday period. And we're a little bit above where we were last year on an absolute level. That's a good sign. That suggests that there's a little bit of momentum there on the intermodal side, a little bit of momentum on the container side, both on the domestic and the international side. So now, let's shift gears. Let's talk about the carload markets. And carload, very similar to its intermodal counterpart, showed a typical July 4th holiday weakness, typical July 4th behavior. We went down, we're a little bit above where we were last year on an absolute basis, but we're below the five-year average. We started out below the five-year average. So we made a typical holiday decline. The question again will be, as we look at the volume for this week, as we look at what will come out next week, do we bounce back to, right back to where we were running before the holiday, or do we not quite get all the way back? That will be the thing that we have to watch as we go through the next several weeks and months. We think about economically sensitive freight. What we'll see here is it's holding up a little bit better than the overall carload markets. It's essentially right at its five-year average number. It's basically right on last year's number. And this is something that we want to see. We want to see these economically sensitive carload commodities outpace overall carload. We want to see them perform better because these are the sectors that are going to drive carload growth over the longer term. And as a reminder to those of you who may have taken a week off, who may not listen all the time, when we talk about economically sensitive freight, that means no coal, no agriculture, no petroleum. Just those sectors that are more closely and directly tied to the underlying economy and trade less on a commodity basis, where those other things are very much tied to a commodity price. These economically sensitive commodities are less directly tied to that underlying price. Things like automotive, things like pulp and paper, things like lumber and wood, those sorts of sectors are what's in this number. But you can't talk about carload and not talk about the bulk sectors, not talk about the two big elephants in the room. First of all, coal. Coal is still the largest carload sector by volume. And coal, actually performed better than we would expect in the July 4th holiday week. We saw a decline, certainly, but we did not see as large a decline as we would typically expect when you look at the five-year average or when you look at last year. And yes, we're below the five-year average, but we're well above last year. And that's not surprising when you think about coal, when you think about electricity demand, when you think about natural gas prices, the competing fuel for coal for domestic electricity generation. We've been up in $6, $7, $8 per MMBTU over the last month or so. That supports coal-fired generation. That supports coal-fired dispatch, particularly when you couple that with a very hot summer in large coal-burning regions, parts of the upper Midwest, Texas particularly. These areas have had a lot of electricity demand, a lot of air conditionings going full blast. In Houston, you just had its hottest June on record, and if the current pace holds up, it's on pace for its hottest July on record. That translates to a lot of electricity demand. That translates to a lot of coal demand. A lot of every coal-fired unit they have is running flat out to try and meet that demand. And that's going to continue through the summer. Now, how long the summer lasts? Does it go all the way through September? Does it go into October? Or does it start to roll off around Labor Day? We don't know that yet. That will be very interesting and very telling when we think about the shoulder season, when we think about the fall season. How do folks rebuild their inventories? How do folks position their inventories, particularly ahead of 2023, where you have a significant amount of coal-fired generating units across the country that are slated to come offline because of consent decrees, either with local environmental groups, state environmental groups, or the EPA. Switching gears, looking at the grain markets. Grain took a notable decline in the holiday week. And this will be a very interesting to see how it recovers. We're starting to get into the middle of the summer. We should see a little bit of a bounce. We should see a little bit of a recovery off of these levels, but we'll see where they come out to. Certainly as we get into the harvest season, we would expect the grain number to look very good. You do not expect a repeat of what we saw in Canada last year with a very weak harvest. Certainly, there's global demand out there for grain when you think about what's going on across the globe, and grain is a global commodity in that way. So we certainly expect, as we go forward, to see grain volumes supported over the final two quarters of the year. looking at chemicals traffic really was just typical. It came down to eventually its five-year average in the holiday week and should bounce right back to where it was before the holiday. Natural gas prices have come down off their highs of $8 or $9 from MMBTU. They're down about $6 from MMBTU. What we will have to watch is what happens between crude and natural gas prices as we go forward in time. Natural gas has stabilized and gone back up. Crude continues to fall. It's down below $100 per barrel. That's important for chemicals volumes because U.S. chemical production is largely for export. The reason U.S. producers can export to the rest of the world is because their import costs, their feedstock costs, are that much lower because much of the rest of the world indexes their chemical feedstocks to naphtha, which is linked to the crude price. So to the extent the crude price comes down faster than the natural gas price, that advantage that U.S. producers have gets eroded. Petroleum products, the other big part of the chemicals space, has come down each of the last 2 weeks, but it's come down from sort of the high end of the range. From the post-pandemic period, petroleum products have really held between 19 and 21,000 carloads a week fairly consistently over the last nearly 2 years at this point, and that is where we are. We're coming down from that 21,000 level, now closer to 20,000, so still within the range, but relative strength compared to where they had been running for much of the period, closer to 19,000 carloads per week. So definitely a little bit of a decline from recent highs, but overall fairly strong result for petroleum products. Stone, sand, and gravel, a little bit less of a decline than you would expect in the holiday week, essentially right at the five-year average, a little bit above last year. This says that construction, highway construction, commercial construction, are really doing quite well, and that is a good sign to see. Obviously, this is a sector that's been beaten down a little bit over the last few years as drilling sand has not kept pace with what it was in the later 2010s, but certainly a more normal year here, a more normal seasonality returning to this commodity group. Lumber and wood. Now, this is a little bit interesting. It essentially held flat in the holiday week. You didn't see a holiday decline like you might expect. Now, you saw a drop-off in the weeks heading up to the holiday. You saw a rather dramatic decline over the last, call it, 3 weeks ahead of the holiday. But in the holiday week itself, it really didn't move a whole lot. Held fairly flat, which put us above the five-year average and well above last year. And that's interesting because that suggests a little bit of strength when you wouldn't necessarily impart that. When you think about residential construction, when you think about mortgage rates going up, when you think about the housing market, you wouldn't necessarily have expected that result in a holiday week for lumber and wood. We'll keep an eye on it as we go forward, but certainly it is a sector that has some headwinds over the second half of the year. Pulp and paper, a decline, but declined less than you would have expected in a typical holiday week. Of course, it's operating at a lower level than you would expect seasonally, you would expect historically. So maybe that's an evening out of some of those factors. But we are above last year. We are a little bit below the five-year average, but we are above last year in the holiday week, and we'll see where this goes over the rest of the summer in the weeks and months ahead. Automotive volumes, very close to last year's levels. Took a significant decline in the holiday week. That's not entirely unexpected. Automotive typically sees a sharp reduction in the holiday week. The plants take downtime, they close for retooling. You start to see that activity go on during the summer. The question will be, how quickly do we ramp up out of the holiday? Do some of these plants, if they don't have semiconductors, if they don't have rubbers, if they don't have other parts that they need to complete the finished automobiles, do they take an extended shutdown? Do they take some extended downtime? We haven't seen the same reports of extended downtime that we saw around the Easter holiday, but we'll have to see as we go forward just how quickly automotive ramps up over the next couple of weeks. And with that, let's wrap up. Carload and intermodal, really just, you know, business as usual for the July 4th holiday week. You know, a typical decline, a significant decline, but not anything that would that would raise alarms, that would raise bells, that would flash warning signals about the overall health of the economy or the overall health of the carload market. It's just a typical seasonality, and we'll know more when this week's data is out and available, but we'll certainly keep an eye on it. But we wouldn't expect to see anything other than a rebound back to where they were running before the July 4th holiday. And, of course, we talked about it off the top. There's a lot of service. There's a lot of labor. There's a lot of issues out there that cloud the outlook when you start to think about predicting what's going to happen over the next several months. Not just in labor uncertainty, not just on the rail side, but also at the ports. People tend to forget on the intermodal side that they don't deal with intermodal, forget that the ILWU contract expired on July the 1st, and negotiations continue. But how long will that go on without additional disruption, without port slowdowns, without maybe not even a full shutdown, but just a work slowdown at the ports? We've certainly seen that in past contract negotiations between the Pacific Maritime Association and the ILWU out there. In past contracts, we have always had some sort of hiccup. We haven't seen it yet this time around. Doesn't mean it won't happen. Certainly something that folks need to keep an eye on, and certainly something that I would peg as a higher likelihood event than a rail stoppage, than a rail work stoppage, for sure. I would keep my eyes on the West Coast, on that port labor situation. That, I think, has a much higher probability of coming to fruition than anything on a national Class 1 train and engine possibility for a work stoppage. And with that, I'd like to thank everybody for joining us this week. Appreciate everybody taking time out of their busy schedules to listen. As always, if you have any questions about what you're in the podcast, what you're seeing in the reports, what you're seeing in your business, do feel free to reach out to myself or any member of the FTR team. We get up in the morning to talk about these issues. It's what motivates us. It's what fires us. So feel free to reach out with your questions. We are here to help. We're also here to listen. We're also here to hear what's going on in your business. We want to hear what's going on in your particular niche of the world. We try to be everywhere. We certainly appreciate any feedback that folks can give us about what they're seeing in their business to make us that much smarter as well. And with that, thank you for listening. Have a great week. We'll talk to you again next week. As always, I am your host on the Rail Market Update Podcast, Todd Tranowski, the Vice President of Renown Intermodal here at FTR. Thank you for joining us. Have a great week. We'll talk to you again next week.
That's it for this week's Rail Market Update on the State of Freight Podcast. The Rail Market Update will be published each week along with a downloadable PDF of the presentation. If you find this transportation intelligence useful, please take a moment to give us a positive rating on your podcast platform of choice and send us your feedback by email at podcast@ftrintel.com. You can find more publicly available State of Freight content and download the PDF of today's presentation by going to www.ftrintel.com/podcast. FTR is the leader in freight transportation forecasting in North America, providing consistently reliable reports for trucking, rail, and intermodal transportation, as well as providing demand analysis for commercial vehicle and rail car. For more information about the work of FTR, visit www.ftrintel.com or call us at 888-988-1699 to find out which publications will best support your business.